Welcome to the Mug Meeting Summaries Podcast. I'm Gilbert Dutilleux. The last of our mini topics at the January meeting featured Adam Thompson talking about installing various Linux distributions under VMware.
Running Linux under VMware is something that I've had quite a bit of experience. Actually, running Unix under VMware is something I've had a fair bit of experience with over the last year or so. One of the customers I work with uses VMware's ESX product. Although I will say that any full virtualization product will have largely the same results as I'm seeing and I'm going to talk about here. And this is mostly going to be in the nature of a demo with some comments about what I've seen. The two OS's, three OS's, sorry, four OS's, now that I think of it, that I've used under VMware are OpenBSD, FreeBSD, CentOS, and Ubuntu. Of those, Ubuntu is at the moment, and of course I'm sure somebody will leapfrog Ubuntu within the next 12 months, but at the moment Ubuntu is far and away the easiest to set up in a virtualized environment. This may have some completely coincidental relationship to the fact that Ubuntu is pushing their system as a VM host and a VM client. And they've made it VM agnostic. It's not just under Xen or under KVM. It's also happy under VMware. It's happy under Citrix, the commercial version of Xen. It's happy under OpenVZ. It's happy under pretty much anything you can think of. I'm going to very rapidly create a new virtual machine and test. Is that readable?
Yeah, there it is.
Okay. If you're at the back of the room and you can't read it, I'm sorry, buy glasses. And I'm going to, so I'm just telling it where is it. I'm saying it's a Linux box, and by the way, it's a limitation of VMware. You have to use a Windows client to manage it. Everything else doesn't care, but it's a Windows client. And where's CentOS? CentOS is in the list. They actually support it. Here's the first difference. CentOS, I have to emulate an EtherExpress 1000 Intel network adapter. With Ubuntu, I can use the Power Virtualized adapter, which has, in almost all cases, noticeably lower overhead. Although it's not any faster overall, it's just less CPU overhead. CentOS does not support the Power Virtualized adapter out of the box. Thin provision, make my life easy. I'm going to edit the settings and tell it where I can find my CentOS ISO images. CentOS 5.7. Connect the virtual DVD drive at power on so that I have something to install from. Open the console. Now, for those of you who haven't used VMware, I'm actually looking at the blank turned off monitor of the virtual machine I just created. Now I'm looking at the non-virtual monitor of the machine I just created. And it is 9:20 at the moment that I'm starting this install. CentOS, first, takes about 20 minutes to install, a large chunk of which is spent just loading the drivers and booting the kernel, and let's skip testing the virtual media. It'll be fast, but not that fast. Most of you have probably seen a Red Hat install. This looks pretty much like every other Red Hat install you've ever seen. The one thing it does pick up by default, just flashed off screen, it detects that it's under CentOS, and it detects that it can use the VMware SVGA driver for X. If I was silly enough to install X on a server class machine in the first place. US, yes, I'd like to initialize the drive. It searches. Remove. Sure, we'll go with the default layout. Yes, I really want to do that. Oh, and... Oh, wait, back up a screen. Well, it also did detect, I skipped past it one step too quickly, that it was a VMware disk. All it's actually checking there is the SCSI identify string on the disk, and VMware says, hi, I'm a VMware brand SCSI disk. Password. Oh, that's grub password, sorry. And MBR. Would you like to configure ETH 0? Sure. Just do IPv4 because I have DHCP happening on this subnet. New York. Winnipeg. What did I do wrong?
Those don't match.
Am I typing it?
Apparently.
Nobody pays this. It's
contagious. Maybe we'll get Michael up here to type it.
That'll get you going.
I'm going to deselect. Note, one thing I'm not going to do is I'm not going to install the virtualization package. I know many people, myself included, who have made this mistake the first time they did it. That sets up the CentOS box as the virtualization host, as in you're going to run VMs on it.
Awesome.
Not run, yeah. Not the other way around.
I've done that on purpose, I'm ashamed to say. It's a story for later.
Okay.
It worked very badly, but it worked.
So CentOS is going to go through its usual thing. One pleasant side effect of running in a virtualized environment, or at least in a relatively high-end virtualized environment, which is why I'm doing this all through a remote system, is it's a heck of a lot faster than installing on bare metal. Mainly because it doesn't have to spin up the stupid DVD. Mm-hmm. Or pause while it's reading from the incredibly slow USB stick you plugged in that's 5 years old and really should be going in the garbage by now. So, yeah, this is going to...
Same thing for booting, right?
It's also significantly faster for booting. CentOS, not as fast as it can get, though. Now, so this is going to take... Oh, all right. It's going to take another 50 seconds to install. Now, in part, this is a testament to what a very large budget can get you in terms of a VMware cluster. But, you know, at the same time, this is sort of inherent in any virtualized system, with the notable exception of running Xen out of the box on Ubuntu without any customization. If you do that, it insists on flushing the entire disk buffers every time the virtual machine does a write call. So all of your disk I.O. suddenly becomes about two orders of magnitude slower than normal instead of faster than normal. Done.
Wow.
Okay, so that was a CentOS 5.7 64-bit install. I'm not doing Red Hat 6. I'm not that much of a masochist. And tick-tock, tick-tock. Again,
the global base. I should have asked earlier, my fault.
Tell you in a second. It should be the same on both CentOS and Ubuntu, I know that. Hoping. And yeah, the CentOS kernel and initrd are by far the slowest part of this process. One of the reasons is when you install CentOS as a virtual guest, it still gives you an initrd with every driver known to mankind. Which, on the one hand, is okay, that's handy, and is good from a disaster recovery perspective, not so good from an efficiency and performance standpoint. So, you know, which end are you focusing on? This may or may not be good. And there's nothing I need to... Oh. And we picked up a host name from DHCP. Interesting. Didn't intend to do that. BOGO MIPS. There you go. So, that used... Now, there's not a huge difference. And before anybody says that I'm going to be comparing apples to oranges, although I'm comparing CentOS 5.7 to Ubuntu 11.04, or actually 11.10 now, I think, the differences between CentOS 5.7 and Ubuntu 10.04 were almost identical. There's very little difference from this standpoint. So we've got a disk footprint of just under a gig, just barely under a gig, 964 megs. I could have shrunk that if I really, really wanted to, but I would have had to use Kickstart to shrink that disk footprint. Even though we're virtualized, it's set up swap by default. Kind of pointless in a VM environment, since the VM environment swaps for you anyway, but it's there. And
not as efficient.
Well,
because it doesn't have information that the guest has to know
this is
what's best to swap.
True. There are arguments for doing it both ways. There's arguments for doing it both ways simultaneously. Which way you do it really depends on what you're actually attempting to achieve. So 900 and something, 964 megs, I think, of disk space and 194 megs of memory. Okay, that's pretty reasonable. The main difference, from my perspective, for the tasks that I have to do, is that now I have to go into CentOS and shut off all the useless bloody services. The one that particularly bugs me in a virtualized environment...
Smarty.
Like, come on. There's less than 0 point in running this in a VM environment. Because it can't see the information. Like, it literally cannot possibly see that information. And if I remember correctly, I think the other one's maybe just a cron job. Yeah, I don't see it in here. The other thing that it leaves on... Oh, yes, it also leaves on the Broadcom iSCSI, that one, which is great if you are running iSCSI, you know, on a Broadcom chip. But again, you're in a VM environment. You can never touch the Broadcom chip. Another service that can never possibly be less, more than absolutely, completely not useful. So there's a bunch of things that are just not quite tweaked for a VM environment. And I acknowledge CentOS is not aiming at a pure VM environment, but Red Hat's trying to ramp up their virtualization game too. Maybe Red Hat 6 is better. I don't know. I haven't used it. However, if I can escape from there, go back to here. Custom. Test Ubuntu. Ubuntu Linux. Oh, no, sorry. Let's do an apples to apples. Typical Linux Ubuntu 64-bit. Ubuntu also defaults to an E1000 type adapter, but it supports all of the VMware paravirtualized adapters out of the box. No extra drivers required, no packages to install, no repos to pull in. Built into the shipping Ubuntu kernel is support for all VMware devices, all paravirtualized Xen devices, all paravirtualized KVM devices, all paravirtualized QEMU devices, all paravirtualized Box devices, ad infinitum. In some scenarios, this can dramatically improve performance. In some scenarios, you'll get exactly the same performance, just with less overhead. So either way, this is a win. Guaranteed. And I do need to edit some settings here to do pretty much the same thing, pointed at my Ubuntu DVD.
Was the RAM on the other one 2 gig? But it said 2 gig. Does anyone remember?
Yeah, it's built in.
Tell you in a minute, because apparently I can't alt-tab to another window while this dialog is open. Mm. Yeah, and that's 11.10 that I'm doing here. One thing I'm going to do in Ubuntu that I can't do at all, again, in CentOS 7, is switch from emulating a BIOS to emulating an EFI firmware.
Mm-hmm. You didn't hit on boot the CD-ROM check.
Thank you. That would have had me sitting here for a few minutes going, what's wrong? I always find it eventually, but...
yeah.
But yes, it does take a few minutes. So we'll open that console, power on that virtual machine. One of the first differences, because I booted in EFI mode, is it launches a frame buffer instead of an 80 by 25 text console. This is actually characteristic of any EFI machine versus BIOS, legacy BIOS. Normally I do expert mode, but that's just going to make things complicated tonight, so I won't. Main advantage of doing expert mode is I can tell it to not do DHCP, and it doesn't try and magically do DHCP for me. I'm in Canada, no, don't detect the keyboard layout, I'm using an English keyboard. I'm finding that from an operation standpoint of, you know, hey, Adam, can you turn up a new FTP server today? How much time do I want to waste? Faster. The install goes faster. Not a huge difference, just slightly.
Is there some reason you're not just using the VMware images for these OSs? Are the options that are built into those just don't work for you? Or?
The biggest problem with the VMware images is they don't come from CentOS and they don't come from Canonical. Mm-hmm. They come from unknown anonymous contributor X on the internet. Which, granted, so do the operating systems themselves to a certain extent, but it adds another layer of, I'll call it insecurity. Mm-hmm. And
so
I
what
have
you're saying is use the source disks, create your own machine, and then save that as a VM image for next time.
Which is normally what I do.
Okay.
Rainy River.
Close enough. Close.
The server I'm working on is actually physically located in Dryden, Ontario.
Dryden, okay.
It correctly detected that Rainy River is the closest from a pure geographical standpoint. Unfortunately, it's wrong because Dryden does not follow the Rainy River time zone rules. It follows the Winnipeg time zone rules. And LVM, again, is on by default. And again, LVM kind of useless in a virtual environment. Not completely useless,
not
but
completely.
It, your VM, again, same argument, right? Your virtual environment gives you the ability to expand disks ad hoc. Why do I need LVM doing the same job for me? It's not useless, but again, it depends on what your aim is, what your goals are. Right, the changes to the disks. So, yeah, all in all, it's about the same number of prompts that CentOS gives me. The main difference from my standpoint, and I don't know how much I'll be able to simulate it, is at runtime, when the systems are heavily loaded, the fact that it automatically picked up and, shoot, I forgot to change one of them. The fact that it can automatically pick up those power virtual devices instead of the emulated physical devices means I can run about 10% more load on these VMware hosts than I could otherwise. So that's not a huge difference, but when you're scaling, I mean, I'm not yet today, but if you're scaling to 100 VMs, that's 10 more VMs you can load up before you got to go buy new hardware. Makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And what we'll see once this is done, actually, the first thing you'll see is how ridiculously fast an EFI boot is when it's virtualized. It's not quite this fast in physical hardware. Nothing is quite this fast in physical hardware. Well, yeah.
I bet it would be if you booted it on the same hardware that clustered it on.
Nope, actually it would be about 5 to 10 minutes slower. Because the blades that this cluster is running on, post takes a good 7 or 8 minutes.
Yeah.
That's a cold boot, not fast.
And it was Adam. No, don't encrypt my home directory. No, I don't want a proxy server. Actually, expert mode really isn't all that much slower or more complicated, come to think of it.
Are you saying that both of these OSs don't require the VMware tools for the hardware to be optimized?
With CentOS, if you install VMware tools under CentOS, yes, you can use power virtual devices, but not for booting, which means you now, if you want to use a PVSCSI device, and I see the frown, I'll explain this in a second, if you want to use the power virtual SCSI device under CentOS, you're basically limited to only secondary disk volumes, not your boot. I think you can do it for root. You can't do it for slash boot. The reason you can't do it for slash boot is because every time the kernel version gets updated and you haven't yet remembered to update VMware tools, because it doesn't happen automatically anymore, it tries to make a new initrd, fails, and you're left with an unbootable system. This is not my idea of fun. Been there, done that, and it was excruciatingly painful to recover. The network card has almost the exact same problem. If you upgrade your kernel without also remembering to run the VMware Tools upgrade script, or pre-upgrading it, which is usually what you wind up having to do, you break your VM completely. And I don't know why. I don't know why just not being able to load the network card driver would break things so thoroughly. After it happened to me once, I just made sure it never happened again. So I didn't really waste a lot of time investigating it, but that the fact that they don't stay in sync automatically is a major, major hassle.
Wasn't there some kind of a tool from Dell, like DKMS or
that
something
was supposed to solve this?
Yeah.
Yes. It doesn't get installed by default with CentOS.
Right.
You have to go specifically download it, and the VMware drivers aren't set up to use it anyway. So there's not a lot of point. You can install the OpenVM Tools package on CentOS, but that pulls in the entire X set of RPMs.
Oh, wow.
Well, because it includes a little GUI client to emulate what you can do in VMware on a workstation.
Right.
Well, the GUI client depends on an Xlib, which depends on the Xfont server, which depends on the Xfonts, which depends on the Xtoolkits, which depends on the... And you wind up pulling in almost a gig of extra software. Done. So actually, you know what? I think the Ubuntu install actually took a little bit longer. Yeah, there was the whole boot. That seems slower. What's going on?
It's less informative.
Yes. Apparently, the demo was going too well.
which pair of virtualized?
Nope. Sorry?
Which pair of virtualized bit didn't you configure to segment the VM?
The SCSI disk, which may be part of why this takes a little bit longer. I don't know. The frame buffer is annoying when you're running in 1024x768, because the frame buffer is also 1024x768, but now I have to fit it inside window decorations. Okay, this is much slower than normal. Maybe my disks are just busy. That's, of course, the flip side. The downside of a shared disk environment is I never know what else is using all my I/O.
So did they start doing backups, right?
I don't know.
Switch into your VM hypervisor monitor and ask.
Yep, I could, theoretically. That's why.
It's probably the security guy going, oh my god, somebody's setting up VM.
It was actually sitting at the login prompt. That's what was taking so long.
Couldn't see it.
Couldn't see it. As I just said about the resolution, that's not going to work on an Ubuntu box. Okay. And yes, I know that's going to be a little bit small to read, sorry. And we're at just over the 1,000 megabyte mark with LVM. Normally, when I do the expert mode install, I don't use LVM, and it comes in around the low 800 meg mark. So, not a huge difference. It's about 100 megs difference. Not best case. Best case, I can get Ubuntu down to about 400 megs if I use their tools to customize the install. If I use Red Hat's tools to customize their install, I can get it down to about, I think it's about 600. So, it can...
Let's see if they're compiling the kernels the same way Google Maps showed.
Why do I think think that lives in ETC.
Because you want to be able to adjust it
yes.
on demand?
Yes, they both reported 5320 BOGO MIPS. And those are... Oh, that's really hard to read. Sorry about that. They're... The heck are those processors? Come to think of it.
That proxy PU info will give it to you. It'll pass through the CPU ID.
Sorry, what will?
Just cat the proxy PU info.
Right. Okay.
That's not what the real processor are.
Yeah,
it's yeah, it is, actually.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
It doesn't emulate the CPU. It passes along the CPU ID.
So the i7s, I saw i7s in the cluster.
Yeah.
Not
no.
on Xeon.
It's no.
It's a Xeon i7.
I thought it was in the Halo. Does that show up as a Xeon?
What you saw was...
That one, yeah.
It's the Core i7 generation of the Xeon processor.
Oh, okay. That's what you figured. Okay.
So, like, because the Xeons are always just regular Intel cores with more, bigger, better whatevers. So it's basically an i7 with 10 times as much cache. And there's a few things, a few other changes beyond that, but like
ECC.
Multiprocessor, ECC, the faster data bus, you know.
Cache coherency stuff.
Yeah, a bunch of bigger, faster bits, but it's still an i7 ALU at its core. So if I go look at, and right there, dead center, VMware tools, not running, not installed. Translation, CentOS and VMware can't play nice out of the box to relinquish CPU resources when idle, to do like memory ballooning on demand, to manage I/O a little bit better. All that stuff doesn't happen. Now, the VMware's raison d'etre is that it emulates all this stuff so perfectly that your OS doesn't have to care. So CentOS does work just fine. Flip to Ubuntu, I get a slightly different answer. That's not normally what it says.
It's probably because you don't have the drivers in.
Shouldn't have to do that. Thank you. Now, that's what happens under CentOS as well. Bit of a hassle.
Yeah.
There is a way around it, but... Okay, so what did I do on the other boxes then? If I go look at which one of these is... That one is. That's what I expect to see. It says running, third-party or independent. So, yeah, it knows that there's a VMware-compatible system there. It says, it's not mine. I don't know what kind of shenanigans you guys are up to, but, you know, it can... Normally, Ubuntu is willing to talk to VMware, again, out of the box. If I want to, I can install the VMware tools on Ubuntu, like the actual VMware-branded VMware tools, and replace Ubuntu's native integration. That works, too, if I want to. On CentOS, well, I guess on both OSs, I have the choice. I can either use the VMware tools or the OpenVM tools. The difference is mainly that, out of the box, I don't have to customize Ubuntu, which I enjoy, very much enjoy. I've got a couple of running systems. They both have database engines loaded and otherwise are pretty much sitting at the stock defaults. Ubuntu has used, 15 gigs of storage. I must have done something on that. 1.8 gigs of RAM. If I go look at my Red Hat box, there's the part I really hate about running CentOS in VM. Can anybody read that consumed host memory line?
3 gig.
That's about normal for a CentOS VM. 1.8 to 3. And considering that VMware now licenses and charges you based on the amount of memory you allocate, guess which OS I'm installing all my new VMs with? But I have installed VMware tools on this box. It is not running with the paravirtualized drivers, so I don't have to worry about breaking my initRD when it loads. It can tell me things like, It knows its own DNS name. It knows its own IP address. Where is performance? CPU, pretty steady. There's no big surprises. This is CentOS. There's really no surprises under Ubuntu either. I'm going to guess 3:20 a.m. Michael, which cron line was it that ran around 3 a.m.? Was that cron.daily?
I don't know, but you can front that and see.
Well, that could be 4 a.m. I can't tell on this little graph. Mm-hmm. So you can tell that, you know, I used, instead of steady state, 2.75% CPU usage, I suddenly skipped up to 3.5%. Woo! If I look at memory, flatline. Doesn't change.
0 meg. That's the ballooning, though.
Was that just ballooning? Was that why?
That's the only thing that's usage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're right. Sorry, that's balloon. Where's the graph I'm looking for on my little itty-bitty screen? Memory. Okay, that's one area where CentOS is a little bit harder on the infrastructure than Ubuntu is. Again, not a huge difference. We're talking, like, just percentage points. CentOS consumes more memory in spikes like this. There's just a bunch of stuff out of the box, by default, that are left running. But if you don't turn absolutely everything off, it starts up a bunch of processes on a pretty regular basis. I don't remember what it's running. That looks like about every hour. No, there's stuff in cron.hourly, so not unexpected. Disk usage, again, that's pretty minimal. It's your steady state. And one thing that it may be interesting, if you've ever installed a new system and sat there wondering in the middle of the night, why is my hard disk light on? In a virtual environment, you can actually often, not always, actually get an answer to that question. And more importantly, you can also tell, is it really on or is it just an optical illusion because it's, you know, flickering once every 1/100th of a second, but it just looks like it's on to me. Well, these graphs will really tell you. 15 kilobytes per second is the steady state for this virtual machine. Whoop-a-dee-doo-da. I have a case at home that would be shining a bright little LED 24/7 with that disk activity pattern. Is it your case? Is it just the I.O.? And yes, these tools exist in the native OS as well. This is just all gathered in one easy-to-read spot. Network activity. Woo! Heavy, heavy usage on this VM. If I go look at performance on the Ubuntu box, the numbers will all look very similar. CPU. And here is the big advantage of having the virtualization drivers compiled into the kernel. It's not sitting chewing up 3% of my CPU, it's chewing up 0.3% of my CPU. That's fairly typical. I don't really understand how, I just know it works. And with that same CPU spike, this one looks like it's at 7 a.m., not 4 a.m., but whatever. Memory ballooning again, nothing changed. Ubuntu's disk I.O. very much spikier than a Red Hat / CentOS system. Again, the difference, zero, big spike, zero. With any oversubscribed system, which, you know, is typically how you build a virtualized environment, this is way friendlier than steady, continuous I.O. Because the odds of two VMs doing that spike at the exact same instant, virtually nil. I mean, you can work it out mathematically. If that was a 1 minute long spike, it's close enough to zero for most people. Memory, again, very similar. You know, it's much lower across the board with a bigger spike, which, for my purposes, translates into more friendly to virtualization. And, again, you can tell that this system is just chattering its brains out on the network, not...
Oh, it's 7 a.m. Someone checked their email.
Most likely, you know what, if I had to make a guess, I'd say 7 a.m. is when it checked for security updates. which would actually perfectly explain that and that. APT, just like Yum, is a bit of a hog. So, point really is just it's dead easy to install whatever Unix flavor or whatever Linux flavor you want in a virtualized environment nowadays. There's not a lot of difference between them. You can, for the most part, just treat it like you would a physical system. Some of my VM systems, I don't have any swap on at all. There's no swap partition, and I just rely on allocating enough memory. Others, I have a swap partition configured. It depends on what its task is. I get more flexibility because I can do things like I can add Ethernet adapters on the fly. If I take that test Ubuntu server and I go and I edit its settings and I add Ubuntu. E0 is the only Ethernet adapter in the system. Test Ubuntu, edit settings, add Ethernet adapter, VMXNet, connect, yes, done. Takes a second, complete, okay. Boom, I have another Ethernet adapter. That was real time, on the fly, I didn't pull any magic tricks here. I just added an Ethernet adapter to a system, to a running system on the fly. Now, I can't remove it on the fly. There are limitations. There's ways I could do that if I really had a need to, but I would have to install additional tools in the VM to let me do that. I think I also have to buy another $15,000 license from VMware to let me do that.
How to CPU, how to memory?
Absolutely doable as long as you've paid VMware. I've only paid VMware about one arm. I haven't given them the arm and the leg yet.
We've given them both arms, both legs, torso, you name it.
I see you used VMware.
Enterprise Plus license. Or whatever the...
Yeah, that's what I'm on now, too.
Our VMware ESXi free system does not let you add Ethernet on the fly. You can power it down the VM and add it, but you can't do it on the fly.
Yeah. No, I have the sort of the middle tier of enterprise VMware cluster running here and licensed, so I can add disks on the fly, I can add NICs on the fly. I believe I can add RAM on the fly, although I've never tried it. So, I mean...
But it auto-increments the MAC address.
Yes, it does. The VM environment actually assigns the MAC address, because on a real NIC, it's part of the hardware, right?
Right.
So in a virtual environment, it's part of the virtual hardware.
Yep. You can force it, too, though.
Yes, I can change it if I want.
Repeatability.
Yep.
So you have to stop that VM to remove that Ethernet adapter?
I hear a challenge.
We're running low on time. Well,
yes. Really? I've removed it from the configuration. It did not dynamically hot yank it from my machine. So I can... It's basically now flagged for removal at next boot, is what happens.
Could you do an if down and then remove it?
Maybe. I'm guessing probably not, because I set them both up as the same type of Power Virtual adapter. I'm guessing I might be able to do that if I actually RM modded the kernel module. Or, again... Maybe it's just something I would have to have the VMware tools installed to do.
Maybe the Linux kernel just keeps it in its memory.
If it
were to actually try and go to access the device, it might get
packets
some
would go nowhere.
Error. Yeah.
Panic.
I'm hoping it wouldn't panic. Mostly, the VM environment is more robust than that.
It's not the VM. It's the
this would be what Linux does, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, like, it usually doesn't let you do things that would cause the kernel to panic. Hmm. I'm not saying it can't.
Remove the nap from bare metal on its ring.
Yeah, that's a good way to cause a kernel panic.
Probably the same ring in the VM.
So, anyway, we are running now to 10 o'clock. So, it's time for me to stop and say, I've shown you how easy it was to do CentOS and Ubuntu in a VM environment. Some of it's neat, some of it's boring. But it's all pretty easy.
Thanks for your presentation, Adam.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more mug meetings summaries, or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.